More you talk now.
Welcome to the show. I'm Steve. We have an amazing guest. Today, we are going to be talking to a guy who has some great knowledge about something that is being talked about everywhere. Now, guys, unless you've been on another planet in a cave or a coma, we got an election coming up, and there's a lot of talk. People are confused, they're upset, they're angry, they're anxious, they're misinformed, and that's some of what we want to do on the show today. Our special guest is Trent England. He's a speaker, he's an author, he's a film producer of a feature-length documentary film. This film is great, you've got to see it. It's called Safeguard, an Electoral College Story. And he's the executive director of Save Our States. We are so stoked. We are so excited that he's taken time out of his schedule to be with us. Trent from Oklahoma City. Great to see you, man.
Hey, Steve. Great to see you.
Wow. I am so excited. This is so cool how we, I won't talk about how we connected and all that because it doesn't really matter. The thing is, you are here. I can't think of anybody better than you to join us. We're less than 2 weeks away from an election. And I was racking my brain trying to figure out who can we get that understands this, understands students, because you do a lot of speaking to students. We're going to talk about the student leadership things that you're doing in a few minutes. But I am really grateful that you would take time. First of all, tell us what you do and how did you get started?
Yeah, so I'm involved in public policy, so I don't work for the government. I don't work for a political party or a campaign. Okay. I work for a couple of different nonprofits, and we work on public policy. And so some of that work is on criminal justice reforms and trying to make sure that we can keep our communities safe, but also minimize the number of people who are locked up in prison, right? And so that's something that I think is really important. And then most of the other work I do is around elections and how we run our elections.
Oh.
And yeah, institutions like the Electoral College that are so misunderstood, but in a lot of ways are part of why our country has been so successful and has been able to develop into a real model for countries around the world. And so that's what I do. I've always had an interest in this. And people ask me this, and I really don't know why. My parents were not, they weren't like political junkies or, anything like that. Quite the opposite, really. And but I always had this interest in government. And when I was in middle school, I wrote a letter to the editor that got published. And it was like this mind-blowing thing for me, right? Because my parents' friends were reading it and taking it seriously. And all of a sudden I realized, even as a young person, and in some ways, particularly as a young person, I could get involved and people cared what I thought. I mean, if I took them seriously, they would take me seriously. And so that kind of, that was sort of the spark. By when I got my driver's license, I was out with a state legislative candidate driving her around so she could go up to doors and introduce herself to people.
Wow, that's
and
cool.
Having all this FaceTime with people who were in the system. And I learned, the really important thing I learned was, because frankly, later on, I would go on to have some real strong disagreements with this lady who I helped get elected to office.
Oh.
But I knew, she meant well, right? Mm-hmm. Almost everybody in politics, I think this is sometimes really hard for people to hear, especially today, but almost everybody in politics means well. They may have terrible ideas, right? I mean, they may have ideas that I think are dangerous.
But yeah, yeah.
They still think they're good ideas. And I think if we start there, it can help us to be, I can be a skeptic, but I try not to be a cynic. And I try to give people a lot of grace in politics. And I think that's helped me. It's made me want to be involved, but want to be involved in a way that educates people about all
sure,
this.
Sure, sure. Well, and you have to give somebody credit who has the desire, even if it may be a little skewed, to serve others, to be involved in the community, to want to help those, maybe who can't help themselves, if we talk about homelessness or criminal justice or whatever, criminal reform. But I think there's something to be said for that. I've had the chance to interact with a lot of different individuals. I never had the interest in politics like you do. I actually studied
political science and pre-law.
Yeah.
And I was kind of forced in it in a sense because I come from a large Italian family. My grandfather was a mobster. And, you know, I knew I wanted to go from Northern California to Southern California to do music, but he was afraid I was going to be, you know, some guy laying on the street corner or something like that. He said, you got to have something else to fall back on. So he gave me choices anyway. I decided I would do the law thing. I could handle that, study, you know, political science, be the consigliere for our family, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But it has always fascinated me, and I've always had a chance to be involved with different people in government, not at the level you have, but, you know, in a different way. It's now in the show today, I want to make something really clear. And you and I have talked a couple times, which has been great. We are not here today to tell anyone who to vote for.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's so if you're going, oh man, where's, you know, Steve going now and what's happening with Utah? No. We are not here in any way to make a political statement, make a partisan statement, tell you, you better go vote for this person. But we do want to talk about the process of voting. We want to talk about, you know, especially if you're old enough, but even then you should learn this stuff if you can't vote this year, how to vote intelligently. Why do we vote? The process. We want to talk about the Electoral College. I'm surprised how many people, even though it's taught in schools, how many people really don't understand it. So let's jump in. And right up front and say, okay, why do we have elections anyway?
Yeah. I mean, this is the question nobody asks.
Yeah,
it's,
no.
It's a good place to start, right? Because it's important to think through, like, why do we do this, right? Like, why do we let a whole bunch of people go to the, you know, go and cast ballots every couple of years and make these decisions? And I think if we drill into that just real quick for people, it actually helps us to think about why all this matters and in what way it matters and how we should be involved. Because ultimately, we have elections because we believe that people at some level have equal rights or equal human dignity, right? And this idea, I actually think, you know, for as, you know, imperfect a man as Thomas Jefferson was, I think Thomas Jefferson managed to write this down better than anyone, at least up to this time, ever had, right? When he said, people are all created equal, they have equal rights, these include the right to life, the right to your liberty, right?
Sure.
And that forms a foundation for voting, right? Because if we're all equal, Jefferson writes this great letter when he's like shortly before he dies, somebody says, asks him, what exactly does this mean? And Jefferson says, you know, if you've got viewers who out there who like horses, they'll love this analogy. Jefferson says, all it really means is that the average person is not born with a saddle on his or her back and an elite few, I'm paraphrasing just a little bit, an elite few born booted and spurred to ride them by the grace of God. In other words, right, you can, and you know, a couple of generations later, Abraham Lincoln would say this to people who wanted to protect slavery. Lincoln said, look, what happens when somebody who's paler skinned than you comes along? Are you their slave, right? I mean, the idea that we can look around and say, these people should rule everybody else, just doesn't work that way, right?
No.
And so if it doesn't work that way, if we all have this equal dignity, these equal rights, then we've got to have a government that involves all of us. And that's what elections are about. They're about a government that involves all of us. Now, the flip side of that is really important. We have government because not only do we all have equal dignity, we also have equal failings, right? Like every human being is selfish. I'm selfish.
Yes.
I'm self-interested. I'm dangerous, right?
Yes.
And so we have a government that tries to protect us from individual people who take that selfishness too far. So it's, you know, it's an interesting thing, right? We have government because people are flawed, but we have elections because we do all have this equal human dignity, and we need to reflect that not only in the fact that we have elections, but in how we treat people in politics, right? Because
for sure,
you know, we're all entitled to our own opinion, not to our own facts, right? But we're all entitled to our own opinions.
What you've just said is huge, because that's part of the problem. I think a couple issues you've touched on already. First of all, just that one, we're not entitled to our own facts.
That's right.
We are entitled to our own opinion, our own preferences. We're all equal. we need to treat each other equal. I think we've forgotten what it means to be human and to look at another person and, in one sense, celebrate the differences.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, aren't we glad that we're not all the same and we can learn from each other, and when we can practice these elections in a healthy way, you know,
yeah.
and voting in a healthy way. I mean, it can be, I mean, we're talking about democracy, you know, and there's such a conflict today with democracy and civil rights and human rights. And, you know, you mentioned criminal justice. Where does that all come in? To me, it feels like it's gotten really skewed, and it's very confusing, I think, for a lot of people.
Steve, let me give you a picture that I think contrasts with where politics are right now in the United States, and maybe gives people a little bit of hope. In Great Britain, when they hold their parliamentary elections, both sides show up on election night when the polls close, and they dump out the ballot box. They actually, in Great Britain, almost everybody votes in person, on paper, at, you know, a local, you know, basically like a local theater or, you know, event
pub
space
or something. Yeah,
pub, you know. Used to be all the pubs, right? And
yeah.
And they dump out the ballot boxes. They count the ballots. Both sides are there, right? It's not like the Republicans are over here in one hotel and the Democrats are over here in one hotel and they're at one place is having a party and the other place is everybody's all upset. They all have a party together at the end of the night and celebrate
fact
that the election is over. Yeah, and the losing and winning candidates all go up front when they announce who won and who didn't win. And, you know, it just humanizes the process. Yeah, they go up together.
That's crazy. That's foreign to us. I mean, no pun intended with the UK, but to me, it seems so much healthier.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, that's when we talk about election systems, I mean, I think if we can drive these systems, right? Because the systems, the rules, the structures, like all that stuff makes a huge difference. And if we can change those things and shift those things in a way that emphasizes our shared humanity instead of our partisan differences, we can get out of this time, right? We really can.
Oh, that's it. You know, I appreciate that perspective because it can be just discouraging, you know, if you look at the scene, and we have so much more in common than we do, you know, differences, although there are people, you know, that get hung up in their own agenda on both sides, you know, and if we can come together for the good, it would be so much healthier for everybody. So then why do we vote as individuals?
Yeah, so that's a really good question because, you know, some people, I get in these debates around elections, people say, well, you know, does my vote really matter? And it's always a problem because on the one hand, if the election doesn't come down to your one vote, mm-hmm. right, then you know, a mathematician could tell you, well, no, your vote doesn't matter. But of course, the act of going and voting is, you know, it's like showing up, right? It's like showing up. It's like your friend is having a party and maybe you don't feel like going, or, you know, maybe you feel like there's nothing in it for you or there's nothing in it for anybody else or whatever. But when you go and you show up, right, you're making a statement that you care about that relationship. When we cast our ballots, one thing that we're doing for sure is we're saying we care about our communities, we care about our city, our state, our country, and that's important. It's important to make that statement. And when we vote for a particular candidate, we're endorsing that candidate. That candidate may get destroyed, right? But we've made a public statement that we think this candidate would be the best person who was running for this office, right? And, you know, maybe that candidate wins. And then we're in a position, hopefully, to, you know, sort of hold that person accountable, right? That's our vote helped to put that person in office. And it's a part of being a citizen. And it goes back to that idea that we have equal human rights.
Mm-hmm.
We need to act like it, you know, we need to exercise those rights.
Yeah, no, definitely. Because and I like what you said. It does show that we care. Because I hear people flippantly, my vote doesn't matter. I'm not into this. You know, I don't like either candidate. Well, sit down and sort through it and take not just the privilege, not just the responsibility, but I love the way you put that. It shows that we care, that we're concerned, that we want to be involved, that we want to be part of the process. Yes, this person that we elect for whatever position, in a sense, works for us. but did we even bother to invest the time? And that brings up something else. You and I talked about this before the show. Voting intelligently. It just seems like, especially now, social media is so heated up, you know, and I hear celebrities, well, I know for a fact this and that and something else is going to happen. You don't know for a fact. Nobody knows that for a fact, you know, and we have become such a celebrity-driven culture, and no offense to anybody, you may be a great actor, but you really don't understand what's going on. And once again, this is your opinion, not your facts. How do we vote intelligently? I mean, to do it seems to me, it takes time.
I think it does take time, and it takes perspective. I mean, here's one test I'd throw out to everybody right away.
Awesome.
Which is, you know, I use this to challenge people who I agree with, mostly.
Okay.
More people I agree with than people I disagree with. Say, look, if you can't identify something good about the candidate on the other side, and if you can't identify something that's, you know, I won't say bad, but something that's not optimal about the candidate you support, right, you've probably lost perspective.
Oh,
right?
That's huge.
Because
that's huge.
We don't want our politics to be so tribal that, you know, it's enemies and then it's sort of these idols that we set up that can do no wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. the politicians who I think are the best, you know, I mentioned Thomas Jefferson and,
yeah.
you know, I'm a big fan of Alexander Hamilton. I liked Hamilton before he got cool with the musical. I love the musical.
Okay. Glad you clarified that.
But Hamilton was, I mean, the great thing about the musical Hamilton is that it makes clear what a hero he was.
Yes.
And also how imperfect he was, right? I mean, he made mistakes. He made a profound moral mistake that you know, just wreaked devastation on his family and on his legacy, right? And
definitely.
I can still think he was a great man. He was a great leader. He was a hero in so many ways, but he wasn't perfect. You know, Thomas Jefferson wrote a brilliant document in the Declaration of Independence, and he said a lot of terrible things in a lot of other things that he wrote. So and the problem with politics today is, you know, whether you think Joe Biden's the great guy or you think Donald Trump is the great guy, right? They're both imperfect human beings.
Absolutely. And, so true.
Yeah. We've got to embrace that. Right. And we've got to challenge the people on our side. You know, you can't really go to the person who is voting for somebody else and say, your candidate's imperfect. But I think it's healthy to remind the people on our own side that, hey, look, you know, like we don't have to defend everything that the candidate we support is doing. Right. And, you know, people talk about, I don't want to vote for the lesser of two evils. And there's some validity to that. But the reality is we're always voting for imperfect human beings. And We've got to give people grace. We've got to give ourselves grace as voters. And we've got to give the system grace because it's designed. We have a constitutional system that takes into account that we're going to have some boneheads that get elected to office. We're even going to have some crooks that get elected to office.
Yeah,
that's what the Constitution is about. It's about protecting
exactly.
us from our own mistakes.
The imperfect people. Let's go back to that for just a sec because I want to make sure people caught that. This is huge. I mean, this is like a huge takeaway from the show today. So acknowledging, let me make sure I've got this right. When it comes to our candidate that we're supporting, voting for, whatever, acknowledging that person is imperfect, that there are some things or something, one thing, I'm sure many more than one thing, that you'd have to say, I'm not real excited about that, or I don't necessarily agree with that, but I agree with the bigger part of the picture. And this other candidate, as much as I don't support that individual, there's something good there too. Did I get the essence of what you were saying?
That's exactly right. And I think that the next step from there is thinking about what is this job we're hiring them to do?
Oh,
right.
Good.
In my position, I've been able to hire lots of interns and other staff members. And, you know, if I'm hiring somebody to do a particular job, like it matters that they're likable to a certain extent, right?
Sure.
They're going to be a part of
my
team, but that's not the overriding concern. The overriding concern is, can they do the job, right?
And exactly.
I mean, if we're electing somebody to be a mayor, that needs to be a person who can manage a system, right? And so you might have somebody who, I mean, frankly, you might have somebody who you would disagree. You never want them to serve in Congress because you don't like their ideas about welfare policies or, sure. or all kinds of things that Congress deals with. But yeah. if mayors don't do that, if your mayor doesn't do that, and this person is a really good manager, mm-hmm. then I'm going to vote for the person who's a good manager. You know, and if we're sending somebody to Congress, you know, we've had this issue with people running for Congress where I live, where, you know, some of them will talk about these issues and it's like, you don't have any control over that, right? That's not what you do. You're trying to stir the pot. You're trying to get people all worked up over this issue, and Congress isn't ever going to do anything about it, right? Because it's a state issue, or it's something the president does.
Yeah, it's a local thing. That is so huge to me because, I mean, that thinking about who we're hiring somebody for a job. You know, we have interns as well. We've got great interns, but can they do the job, or are they just simply tickling my ears or, in a sense, you know, bashing another candidate? Mm-hmm. You know, tell me how you're going to do the job. You know, that's what I ask our interns. Hey, what makes you want to be part of UTalk? What drove you here? What do you think you bring to the table that we can learn from? And what are you expecting to learn from us? Those kinds of things. So where, I guess I've got a couple of questions. First of all, where do we go to become informed?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's okay. We've got, you know, you hear it constantly, Google it. Well, okay, you know,
that's
isn't always
tough.
Right. You know,
I will give you one really good resource that I like a lot and that a lot of people use, and it's called Ballotpedia.
Okay. So Ballotpedia.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's a wiki, but it's for elections, and it's just fact-based information. You know, so you can go there, and they just aggregate all this information. So you can see who supports this candidate, who opposes this candidate, who's giving this candidate money, what's their background, have they been elected to office before. It's just a lot of fact-based information, and it's a good place to start. Ballotpedia is a really valuable resource. To start with, and then
so now, have you found that to be reliable? Then I'm assuming, otherwise you wouldn't be talking about Ballotpedia.
Absolutely,
okay, cool.
Ballotpedia,
I'm gonna check it out.
I found it to be really good, and from there, you know, then it's important to look at different points of view, and I think you know, this is this can be hard to do. I'm thinking of my parents. One of my parents has a really hard time watching or reading things from people who she disagrees with. It just drives her crazy. And on the other hand, and now I've blown their cover because I said she. My dad, on the other hand, he loves to, you know, he'll spend some time watching one cable news channel and then he'll flip over to the other cable news channel. And it's good because he's got his own opinions. He's got people he agrees with and disagrees with, but he gets both sides. And he understands that even the people he agrees with are spinning him a little bit, right?
Sure.
Or they're sort of validating their own preconceived biases.
Exactly.
Right? We need to know that as voters, right? If we just talk to people who we agree with, we're going to get further and further isolated. And one thing I point out to people is if you have really strong opinions, you owe it to what you believe to be a persuasive person, right? If you care a lot about what you think,
definitely.
You need to be persuasive, and the only way to be persuasive is to understand the other side. And so, you know, I find a lot of people who they're so passionate, but they don't get what the reasons why people disagree with them. And so they're passionate and they're obnoxious. You know,
because
they just can't communicate.
No, they don't. That's it. And it's so important. Voting is so important, and you can't just go because you like somebody, or you know, they can throw a football like a rocket, or you know, whatever it is. And that's not to say they're a bad person. That's not to say they're not good at what they do. But look at both sides. Do you really understand? Because I find that too, the obnoxiousness of some people. I don't want to talk to them because it's like, you don't know what you're talking about. And it seems to me today, not this day, but today broadly, we've got a lot of ill-informed people who are buying into misinformation without checking the facts. And I think we owe it to not just ourselves, we owe it to our community. We owe it to the people running for office. Get the facts. Find, and look at both sides, look at both positions and say, do I agree with this? Do I support more of this than I would of this? You know, it's how have we gotten into this mess that we're in? Because it just seems like it's out of control.
And it, you know, I'll throw one other thing out there, and then I'll try to dig in on that really big question. But
Yeah.
You know, people should go and read the Republican platform and the Democrat platform. And they're, you know, they're kind of, there's some gobbledygook stuff in there.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to step back and, you know, in your state, right, there's probably a, you know, your state Republican Party and your state Democratic Party, and
maybe
your
state has
a Libertarian Party and a Green Party. And that's actually a nice way to go and just read, this is what the party says they believe. Like, not attached to any particular candidate or any particular campaign, but just the party itself. These are the things that they say are important. And I think it's a good way to, you know, people will see that there are good ideas and kooky ideas probably on both sides.
On both sides, yeah.
You know, and I think that's, I mean, again, that's good. And people may find, wow, I really agree with a lot of these ideas, or I really have a problem with a lot of these ideas. And people may be very surprised where they fall, because if we've just been listening to the media kind of makes it all about who they think is nice or mean.
Personalities.
And it's not totally unimportant, but the most important thing.
No, because we're not voting for a personality. You know, we're going back to what you said earlier. We're voting for somebody who can do the job.
Yeah. Yeah. And personality is really a pretty small part of a lot of these jobs. I mean, you asked how we've got here. And I mean, this is a big,
it's a huge
thorny
question. Yeah.
But I do think a lot of it is, you know, just to use cable news as an example, a lot of people pick on social media. I think it's more about cable news, and it's not all bad. I mean, there's some great things about having a lot of news options, but those stations do make money by holding people's eyeballs, right? They make money through advertising, getting people to watch. And what they've discovered is that people like to see things they agree with expressed in really strenuous, fiery ways.
Yes.
And we can either play into that and we can either feed that fire, or we can reject that. And as consumers, we can ask for something else. And, you know, I mean, U Talk is great, right? Because, I mean, here on U Talk Radio, we're having this kind of a conversation. We're not attacking anybody. We're not telling people how they have to vote. And I think, you know, we're offering this. And as people choose this kind of content, hopefully you get some of these bigger media companies looking around saying, hey, there's room for reasonableness. There's room for being respectful.
Yes. Definitely. It's well, and I was reminded a few years ago, the person, the show will go unnamed. I got a call from a very significant cable TV show. And the producer said, you know, the host really likes who you are and what you write and what you say, and would like to definitely like to have you on the radio show and the TV show. What do you think? And I said, well, I'm always open to opportunities like this, you know. And so the producer called back and said, now, I need to verify something. On this topic, you're going to scream and yell. You are going to stomp your feet. You're going to get angry because you're just don't get that. And I said, got the wrong boy.
Yeah.
And the producer said, what? Sorry, not going to do that. That's not who I am. So the producer said, oh, I'm sorry. You know, the host really likes you, maybe sometime in the future, because this is an important topic. And got a call 2 days later when I should have been on the radio show from the producer saying, the host kind of wondering, could you make it for the TV show? We've already missed the radio show. Well, they couldn't find the kind of guests they wanted. And I ended up going down to L.A. and being in a studio, which will go unnamed, you know, to be on this show. And it wasn't a real pleasant experience. I mean, it was, I think they wanted somebody like me that the host and this other guest could have for lunch. And it was just, I held my own. And, you know, it was interesting because I couldn't go any place in the country in the next 2 or 3 months without somebody coming after me going, you didn't get to finish your story. Please finish that story. You know, I mean, I'm at a gas station. I'm in a restaurant. I'm in a hotel. You know, it was really funny because I was frustrated, but I thought, well, okay, if this is the way this is played. But I think that's why we have you talk to talk about things that are important to young adults in a reasonable way. And our opinions aren't really that important. We want to, you talk about you talking to us. We want to hear from you. And in this case, that's why I think we connected so well, was the opportunity to have a reasonable discussion. Okay, now I want to make sure we cover something because to me it's so important. The Electoral College. First of all, you did a film. Give us the title of the film again, because I think this is important.
The film is Safeguard, an Electoral College story. It's on Amazon. It'll come to other streaming platforms at some point here, but it is on Amazon Video right now.
Okay, we'll make sure we put that in the blog so people have that.
The Electoral College is so misunderstood.
Yes,
because
thank you.
Yeah, it operates in the background. We've always had it.
Mm-hmm.
And most of our elections are just, you know, we vote for a candidate. It's a direct election, you know, for a governor or for a state legislator or a member of Congress. And that's really simple, right? And so people do a double take when they realize, hey, this presidential election thing is really different than that. And just to kind of cut to the chase for people, right, when we vote for president, it's a two-step election. So here I live in Oklahoma. So in Oklahoma, we cast our ballots and we determine how Oklahoma votes for president. And every state has a number of electoral votes based on how many members of Congress the state has. So Oklahoma has 5 members of the U.S. House. We have 2 U.S. senators. Every state has 2 U.S. senators.
Yes.
And so we have 7 electoral votes for president. So it's based on our population.
Okay,
small states get a little bit of a boost. But it's a democratic process. Sometimes people say, oh, this is not democracy. Well, it is a democratic process. It's just a two-step democratic process. And it's important to understand why we would want a two-step process.
Yeah, unpack that, because I'm sitting here thinking of the cynics going, oh, come on, isn't it time to get rid of that thing? I mean, we don't know that much about it. It's in the background. It's not in the other elections. Why do we have to have it here? Why is it so critical? And does this mean, again, my vote doesn't really count, my one vote?
So here's a good place, I think, to start in thinking about this.
Okay.
Most people don't realize this. Other countries have very similar systems.
Really?
And yeah, most people don't realize this. And I want to mention 2 in particular, because I think this will help to illustrate why the Electoral College just might be a lot more important than people realize.
Okay.
India, you know, India is the biggest democracy in the world. They declared their independence from Great Britain back in the middle of the 20th century, so about 70 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when India created a constitution, they created an electoral college. And they did that because if you have a two-step election, it prevents one region of the country from controlling the government, right? From having just one part of the country, you know, maybe a few big cities, tell everybody else what to do. So India wanted some balance. Germany, about the same time after World War II, Germany wrote a new constitution, West Germany in this case, and now it applies to all of Germany since they were unified. But Germany created an electoral college type system, a two-step election when they vote for their, you know, this is only for the national executive, their version of president.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that because they did not want the rise of another Adolf Hitler. Right?
Ooh,
Hitler came to power not because a majority of the people supported him, but because a plurality, right? The country was politically fractured. And so Hitler, he rose to power through a democratic system that didn't have these kind of checks and balances. So,
which is very interesting, by the way,
when you think about that,
the implications there. Yeah. Okay. So we got checks and balances with the Electoral College.
Yeah. It protects us from having just one part of the country control everybody else, right? You think about, because it does this, the political parties operate nationwide, right? So sometimes people say, well, we wouldn't have that problem because look at politics today. Well, politics today is a result of having an electoral college, right? The Electoral College says to both the Democrats and the Republicans, hey guys, you got to be out there. You got to be trying to win over people in these other states, you know, just because, you know, California loves the Democrats and Texas loves the Republicans, you know, that doesn't do it for either party. They've got to go from those states where they're popular and then try to convince people in a lot of other states.
The other places,
You know, this no election system is perfect. And there's always going to be unhappy people because somebody's going to lose, right? One side's going
to
lose.
Somebody
every
has
election.
To. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But when you look at these kind of protections and some of the other things it does too, it means that the president is not in charge of presidential elections, right? It's that's down in the states because each state has a separate election.
Very important.
Yeah, I mean, that's another really positive thing.
Yeah, very, which people don't realize.
Yeah, no, that's right. And it does, you know, I guess the last little historical tidbit I'll throw in there was a big effort back about 70, 65 years ago to try to get rid of the Electoral College. And I discovered doing some research I was reading a speech by John F. Kennedy when he was in the Senate. Before he was president, he was a senator. And
yes.
JFK was a big defender of the Electoral College. And JFK pointed out why people were trying to get rid of the Electoral College back then. And I didn't know this.
See, but I didn't either. Yeah.
I read what it was driven by some people who wanted to, and I won't recite the quote because it's got some language that thankfully is not acceptable anymore, but it was driven by people who wanted black people, Jewish people, and people in labor unions to not have a say in politics.
Whoa.
And they said, if we could get rid of the Electoral College, we wouldn't have to listen in particular to black voters. Because the way the Electoral College works, not in every state, but in some states, black voters are a crucial swing vote. So they get listened to. You know, in some states, Hispanic voters are a crucial swing vote.
Yes.
So they get paid attention to. In some states, you know, in Maine, it's actually lobster fishermen. Lobster, like the presidential campaign.
Doesn't surprise
actually,
me.
Yeah, I mean, they care about lobster fishermen, and all of these different groups get a little extra attention because of the Electoral College, because we push this power down out of Washington, D.C. and into the states. When I first started looking into it and really kind of wrap my mind around how this system works, it's like, this is genius, right?
It's brilliant when you think about it.
And I think it actually works better. James Madison is the one who really came up with it. And I think it works way better than James Madison ever suspected it would.
I wondered that.
Yeah. So it's interesting in that way, right? They just weren't quite sure how it would work out. But you look at American history, it helped to pull us back together after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
It helped to bolster the civil rights movement. In the 1970s, civil rights organizations were defending the Electoral College because, again, it helped to protect minority voices.
Sure. No, this is huge. I think this is just a discussion that needs to continue because this is super informative for those who have the opportunity to vote, and even those who are waiting in line maybe next year or a couple of years are going to be able to vote, and to vote intelligently. I'm not sure if that's the best way to vote in more informed. And this two-step process is for our protection. It's to protect democracy. It's to protect all the people of this country. We are just about out of time. I can't believe it. Great discussion. How can people follow you on social media and get more information about what you're doing and find your film? This is super important.
So the website for the movie is safeguard.film.
Okay.
So the movie is called Safeguard, an Electoral College Story. So the website is safeguard.film. And my other work on kind of defending and explaining the Electoral College is at saveourstates.com. And people can follow me on Twitter at Trent England, just my name, at Trent England on Twitter. And people can connect with me there. Always glad to engage with reasonable people on Twitter. Sometimes it's hard to find. So, you know.
It is sometimes. No, it's. And again, we will put all of that in the blog so people can connect with you. I really want to thank you for taking the time, Trent. This has been very informative. And as the different formats of this show go out, I hope it will influence a lot of people. Appreciate you very much. We're definitely going to have you back on the show.
No, my pleasure. This is terrific, Steve. This is a great program.
And real quick, student leaders, you've been working with them.
Yeah.
We didn't touch on that. How can they find out more about what you're doing with student leaders? That'll have to be a topic next time.
So we have a program in Oklahoma called the Fierce Fellowship, which is named after a great scholar and storyteller named Rufus Fierce, who died a few years ago. And so people in Oklahoma can find the Fierce Fellowship. They can just Google that up and it'll pop up for them. And there are programs like that in a lot of other states.
States,
I know Colorado, the leadership program of the Rockies is one designed to help young people engage in politics in a way that's reasonable and positive.
Awesome. I need to check that out myself because, again, you talk all about young adults and encouraging leadership, and we're all about making a difference. We didn't have a chance to talk about that, but we will next time. Thanks again, Trent. I really appreciate you. Great conversation and enjoyed it a lot, and I look forward to our next time to be able to talk.
Thanks, Steve.
This is U Talk Radio.